The following is a production of BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.
It seems pretty clear that countries on the rise to power on the world stage are rarely able to sustain that power indefinitely. Think about the great world powers of the past, the Roman Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the British Empire, the Soviet Union, and countless others. And consider with me, which of these great states are still around? As Isaac Newton might have said in a different context, what goes up must come down. But is this parabolic trajectory only evident in retrospect? Is there a way to project the potential demise tomorrow of a country steadily progressing today? Take, for instance, Brazil. With its large, diverse population, its current political and economic stability, its multitudinous natural resources, and its imminent involvement in both the World Cup and the Olympics, it's evident that Brazil is on the up and up, poised to realize its potential as a world player. However, Brazil is also in a precarious stage of development. Maintaining an upward trajectory requires momentum, and this momentum must be fueled by a continual series of forward-looking decisions. You could fairly say it's decision time for Brazil. Although Brazil has managed with considerable success to rise from third world status, there are still a number of both national and international issues that must be addressed before we can definitively say that Brazil is approaching the vertex or high point of its parabola. As the world is taking stock of the new Brazil, today on Thinking Aloud, we'll be sketching out some of the ups and downs of Brazil's recent progress. I'm Marcus Smith. Thanks for listening. Our guest today on Thinking Aloud is Paulo Sotero, who is the director of the Brazil Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C., and he is an adjunct faculty member of the Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University. In addition, Sotero serves as a member of the Institute of the Americas Board of Directors at La Jolla, California, the Maria Moores Cabot Prize Board of the Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia University, and of the Grupo de Conjuntura Internacional. And he is an award-winning journalist. He contributes regularly to Brazilian and international newspapers, magazines, and scholarly journals. His BA is in history from the Catholic University of Pernambuco, Brazil, and he has a master's degree in journalism and public affairs from the American University in Washington, D.C. Paulo Sotero is on the BYU campus as a guest of the David M. Kennedy Center for International Studies. There's a lecture series ongoing there right now called Brazil Beneath the Surface, and he is presenting remarks titled Decision Time in Brazil. Paulo Sotero, great pleasure to have you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, Marcus. It's a pleasure to be here.
It has been now 2 years since I conducted an interview for my program, Thinking Aloud, about Brazil. And that interview at that time was actually conducted with a New York Times reporter. You'll know his name, Larry Roeder. And the title of his book at that time, a lot of publicity for it, called Brazil on the Rise, The Story of a Country Transformed. I mention that interview because 2 full years have now intervened since I spoke with him. And a lot has happened in Brazil. I want to call to mind, for example, last June or July, the summer of our summer, popular uprisings in Brazil, people on the streets in great numbers in over 80 cities. And you have written recently that on the horizon for Brazil, there may be some tough times coming because of their situation in the global economic, sort of the macroeconomic picture. Would you take stock with me right off the bat, and just the first question, so simple. Are you optimistic that Brazil is still on the rise?
I think Brazil is still on the rise. I think the title of Larry's book, who's Larry's a dear friend of mine, is still valid, but it's a more complicated phase of this rise. Brazil has done very well in the last 30 years by democratizing, becoming a democracy in the 80s. In the 90s, Brazil stabilized its economy, and then 10 years later, Brazil started in a process based on that stabilization, based on democracy, to becoming a more equal society. Brazil obviously has a history, a very heavy legacy of slavery, 300 years of slavery in Brazil. We needed to confront that challenge. One of the most unequal societies on earth has started to really tackle this challenge, and with good results. We have a growing middle class in Brazil, people that have become consumers that before used to be very poor people without access to goods, to services. But that progress created new challenges. And at the same time, the economic model that we were following based on consumption has come to the point of exhaustion. We now need to shift gears and invest on an economy or build an economy with more quality. And that means going from a consumption-based economy to an investment-based economy, to improving productivity in Brazil, to investing on education, human capital, on infrastructure, and all those challenges are very much upon us. And the protests you refer to, they happened in June last year. Nobody predicted them, not the government, not the opposition, not the journalists, not the political scientists. And I think that they reflect to me something. I like to use the analogy of the Reverend Martin Luther King last speech, which is the mountaintop speech. I think Brazilians have been to the mountaintop. They have seen the promised land of a stable democracy with prosperity. They want to get there. They know that we are going there, but now they have doubts. They have anxieties about not finishing this, not, you know, that we may be veering off to some road that we don't want to take. And this anxiety, I think, is what exploded in the streets, is that what is driving our political debate in Brazil. Let me be fair and say that for the formerly very poor Brazilians that are now part of this emerging middle class, Brazil remains a very good country. For them, the economy has, their incomes have been growing at Chinese levels, 5, 6, 7% a year. But the country as a whole is hitting some sort of wall. And in order to continue this progress, we know that we are going to have to tackle some fundamental reforms in the country. And I hope that the upcoming presidential election of October will offer an opportunity for society to debate those choices.
You know, fascinating to me is the historical context, the concurrent history of the United States, where we are talking about increased income inequality, whereas you're talking about a rising middle class. Are Brazilians aware of the concurrent converse scenario playing out in the United States, where one of the more advanced countries of the world, albeit I understand Brazil is like the world's seventh largest economy, something like this, as they're making strides forward, we have this retrograde activity with greater and greater division between the rich and the poor?
Yeah, I think people in Brazil are very aware, well-informed people in Brazil are very aware of the challenge in the United States of precisely a shrinking middle class. After all, this is the country that opened the way of, you know, you build a stable society, a prosperous society on the basis of equality, on building a middle class, and that's what Brazil is doing. We are very aware of that, but we know also that the United States is having this crisis at another moment of its development. We know when President Dilma Rousseff, actually, when asked at the end of 2012 about, there was this issue in Washington of the fiscal cliff, this tremendous problem in the budget situation and the federal government. She was asked something about, you know, isn't the United States in some sort of decline, etc. And it was very interesting that Dilma Rousseff said, no, I don't buy that, that the United States is losing its importance to the world, because the United States has an enormous capacity to reinvent itself. The United States is the country of innovation. The United States has a very important asset, which is its universities like this one, gives it the basis and the instruments to resolve the issues. The issues are obviously difficult. The world is changing. You have you have new emerging actors like China that may in 7-8 years maybe surpass the United States as the largest economy. And you have the other emerging actors like Brazil. Brazil is, depending on the exchange rate, is this around the 7th economy in the world. But again, it's very far behind the group that leads the United States and China. We are talking about the United States with a $16 trillion economy, Brazil 2.7. So a lot to happen for Brazil really to become a prosperous middle-class society. But obviously the debate here is very important because it informs people there about the difficulties of building this, you know, this more just, fair society in Brazil.
I want to talk about something that is so nebulous that nobody can really quantify it, but it has to do with the sort of the atmosphere, the ambiance, the mood of a country. When I look at other countries that have emerged from either potentially totalitarian type regimes, say the history of the Eastern Bloc countries coming out of the Cold War, maybe moving towards established democracies, then a season of hopefulness. Say if you lived in the former East Germany, for example, you come into a new scenario of potential economic prosperity, and then there can be a disillusionment. I'm wondering if there is any hint of disillusionment in the big picture for Brazilians today. And I don't know that the comparative analysis holds because there are substantial differences. But still, a rising prosperity, a hopefulness, the sky is not the limit. And I just wonder if that is clear.
This is a very complicated question and very good question at the same time. I think the sense of that, it's absolutely certain that Brazil will make it, which when I was growing up was as natural to me as breathing. And we did a lot. Between 1880 and 1980, Brazil was among the fastest growing economy in the world at an annual average of 6.5%. Then we hit a wall in the 80s. We lost a lot of ground, and it took the redemocratization, the stabilization program to get us going again. We surfed a very good wave in the world economy where commodities, Brazil is a very efficient producer of commodities, the prices were up, etc. And this cycle has ended, and you can see in the debate in Brazil, you can see in society in Brazil, this anxiety that, yes, we are still very hopeful, but we see the signs that maybe we are not doing the right things. Maybe there are things that needed to be changed. There are, for instance, one thing that is very much debated in Brazil all the time is doing business in the country. The common criticism that there is too much taxes, too many taxes, that the tax burden in Brazil is still a developing country, is as high as the tax burden of the United States, about 36% to 37% of GDP. And this has created those doubts. You have now people, professionals, young professionals, that are starting to talk to, well, let's go abroad and let's try to do business abroad. You have Brazilian companies, including Brazilian global companies, investing abroad, not only because they are global companies, they need to find markets abroad, but because it's also a way of going around the difficulties they face in Brazil. I continue to be optimistic that we are going to continue to face the challenges. Very important, Marcus. We are doing all of this in democracy. This is fundamental, and sometimes people focus too much on the economic side, which is absolutely essential, but we are doing this in democracy. I think that we have the collective will to continue to fight this fight in democracy.
It's in the bones?
I think it is getting to be in the bones. It has taken root in Brazil. I know that Americans are not used to thinking of Brazil as a Western society, but that's what we are. We are a tropical, but a Western society. We share the Western values of freedom and democracy, and Brazil is improving as a nation qualitatively because of that. But we need to keep going, and the challenges ahead, as I mentioned, they are the product of successes. Our challenges today, our problems of today, are problems that I think a lot of nations would like to have. But they are real, and they require creativity, determination, and a lot of courage.
My guest on Thinking Aloud today is Paulo Sotero. He's the director of the Brazil Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C. You've mentioned that the United States is not accustomed to thinking of the Brazil as sort of having developed the democratic maturity to really have that stability. We tend to stereotype Brazil along with other less stable democracies. And this calls to mind sort of our occasional American paranoia that we have. Who is with us and who is against us and that sort of thing. How would you characterize the alliance between these two countries? What conjoint interests lead these two countries to work together if they're working together well, or where are the points of fracture or fissure or potential strain or tension?
Well, Marcus, I just wrote a piece that will appear next week in São Paulo, Brazil, on the Brazil-U.S. relationship. It's not at a good place right now. It is not at a good place in terms of government-to-government relations. You all heard about the affair involving spying on the president of
Brazil.
This
is where Dilma Rousseff turned. I read that she turned to Sweden for jet fighter planes rather than the United States and to Boeing.
Yeah, this I have this from good sources, and the reports on this are, and I checked them, they are very well-based. The United States, Brazil was ready to purchase $4.5 billion worth of jet fighters from Boeing, would have been the first real strategic engagement between Brazil and the United States. And after the revelation of this spying on the Brazilian president, President Rousseff canceled or postponed the state visit she was going to make to Washington. That would have been the first state visit by a Brazilian president to the United States in more than 18 years. And there was this reversal of a decision on the jet fighters. And there has been, you know, a lingering malaise on this. The relationship is not, you know, at a good place right now. And there are the Brazilian government has asked the United States to issue some sort of formal apology. President Obama had already said on January 17th that he would not do so, although he has changed the policies of surveillance and saying that, well, no more surveillance on leaders of friendly nations, on societies of friendly nations. Actually, he said, if I need to know something about Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor O'Connor. But this incident was unfortunate, was real. Now, the other part, which is very interesting, is what happened in the society-to-society relationship. That remains very vital, very vibrant. Well, you at this university know a lot about it because you're part of that people-to-people exchange. Brazilians continue to be very interested to coming to the United States under a program called named Science Without Borders that started with President Rousseff, which started by President Rousseff, had already sent some 50,000 university students abroad in the last 2.5 years. Well, 25% of the students came to American universities or are currently in American universities. The business community also is actually right now putting a lot of pressure on the government and trying to get the dialogue going. So people to people, society to society, I think it continues to go well. The challenge for the governments of Brazil and the United States is to catch up.
Well, the catching up, this is a fascinating thing to me because it seems to me that you could almost relegate what's happening with the big players in the executive branches. That almost feels a little bit like a circus act where the real drivers are sort of the economic players, whether it's the corporate or the individual person-to-person contact. Isn't it almost as though the country's regimes have to follow the lead of where the economies will push them anyway? I mean, there are conjoint interests between these two countries that sort of secure the alliance.
Yeah, and I think there has to be an effort on the part of the United States to realize that this recent unfortunate episode created a bad environment. Most Brazilians, including the ones that are not particularly sympathetic with President Dilma Rousseff, don't like to see, you know, that the United States, that presents Brazil as a friendly nation, a strategic partner, suddenly, you know, the president of that country being snooped on. This doesn't work. The two narratives, you know, it doesn't go together with the narrative of the strategic partner. So there has to be an effort there. At the same time, Brazil has to overcome its own difficulties with this because, for comparisons, president of France was snooped on by NSA. The Chancellor of Germany was snooped on, and actually she responded by canceling some intelligence agreements Germany had with the United States. But President François Hollande from France just recently paid a state visit to the United States and said the NSA episode is over, let's move on. The Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, is expected to pay a visit to the United States, a working visit, 2 days. They have lots of things to talk. She has lots of things to deal with.
There's
President
Ukraine.
Obama. There is Ukraine. There is Crimea. So this, obviously, the Brazilian insistence on this issue is interpreted in Washington as some sort of, you know, well, Brazil doesn't want to get over this. And this creates ill will on this side. So it is a matter of the two governments, you know, working together, and the two societies keep sending messages that they want this relationship to work.
People who will hear our interview may not be in attendance at your presentation. And so I want to spill the beans here and tell us, you've titled remarks for the Kennedy Center, Decision Time in Brazil. Are we talking about a solitary decision? Are we talking about a season of decision time? Is it the selection of the new president? What is this decision time you're talking about?
I think it's a season of decision time, regardless of who will be elected president of Brazil in October. Most likely the scenario right now is that President Dilma Rousseff will be reelected. But regardless of the outcome, we know that there is an economic challenge here for Brazil in this reconversion of the Brazilian economy to a higher production, to more productivity, to a higher quality economy. This will take a while. We need to tackle fundamental fundamental reforms in terms of the tax code, in terms of regulatory frameworks that have been basically ignored in the past, let's say, six to eight years. And we cannot no longer afford that because, you know, the world economy is not going to wait for us to catch up. And we know that there is an increasing sense of isolation in Brazil among business, in the business community. Brazil has reached only three or four trade agreements that are in the world in the past 10-15 years, which are not significant. Businessmen in Brazil, including the chairman of the Brazilian Confederation of Industries, Robson Andrade, who is, by the way, close to President Dilma Rousseff, recently said it in a speech in Denver, Colorado, that we need a free trade agreement with the United States. So the pressure is there, and this sense that, there is going to be a moment of difficulty here is very clear to people, and we will have to tackle that.
One last question for you in just a couple of minutes. We've talked about Brazil in the absence of a Latin American context. We've been talking about America, the United States and Brazil, or maybe even Europe. But there's Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, all the way up Chile, Argentina. I wonder sometimes if as Brazil goes, so will go South America, if those countries will be pulled in the same direction economically and politically that Brazil chooses to go. Does Brazil have that kind of sway?
Yes and no. I think a Brazil that is growing faster with more quality while integrating more Brazilians into the economy, obviously, and in democracy have an impact, the demonstration effect here is very major. But you have countries right now, like smaller economies like Colombia and Chile, that are doing very well by integrating their economies into the most dynamic part of the world economy now, which is the Pacific Rim, Asia. So for Brazil, it is a challenge, especially the crisis that's happening in Venezuela right now requires leadership. You have former President Cardoso, former President Lagos of Chile, other former presidents finally saying something and, talking about their uncertainty in the way leaders in the region are dealing with this, and asking for more dialogue, for more consultation, because, yes, I think Brazil's capacity position in the world will depend very much on how neighbors see our ability to lead, to provide in the region the same sort of practical solutions that we have achieved at home.
Interesting conversation. I've watched from the days I was a child under, Ronald, my first election, Ronald Reagan was president, and our American position vis-a-vis South America and Central America and Brazil, watching what has happened since then. The world is just so vastly different. And so taking stock with you has been valuable for me, and I hope for our listeners as well. Paulo Sotero, great pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much, Marcus, for this opportunity. It's wonderful to talk to you, to the listeners of this great university.
Well, thank you so much. Paulo Sotero, our guest today on Thinking Loud, director of the Brazil Institute of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C. He's on the BYU campus as a guest of the David M. Kennedy Center for International Studies. We'll be lecturing with remarks titled Decision Time in Brazil in their series titled Brazil Beneath the Surface. You can hear this conversation again from our website at your convenience. Just come to classical89.org/thinkingaloud. We always welcome your feedback. Love to hear from you. Just write to us by email at thinkingaloud@byu.edu. I'm Marcus Smith. Thanks for listening.
Thinking Aloud is a production of BYU Broadcasting, made possible in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.